This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show. My name is Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, and a very, very warm welcome to all of our radio family. Thank you so, so much for joining us, even though it's still late already late in the afternoon, so, so close to Shabbos. And those of you who turn your radios on and your devices on and hearken to what we're saying and get involved, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your dedication, your involvement in the share by coming and listening. As always, the program is brought to you as a Refuah Shleima. For Chayim, we'll just mention a few of the names. Avram Yankiv ben Shtern Asara, Yosef Gershon ben Taiba, Yonason Adi ben Chaya Rochel, Sanya Aaron ben Mata Halevi, Perel Rivka bas Sorachana, Tzivia bas Etka, Shena Rochel bas Leah, Shulamis Leah bas Asna, Beseich Shor Chayle Yisrael, amongst all those who might need a little bit of a bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who might be suffering in any kind of way. May the schus of the Torah we come together and learn every Shabbos, Baruch Hashem, Keseder, every single week, may that be a huge, huge schus for them and for any other cholim, any other nitzrochim, wherever they might be in the world, whatever situation they might be. The schus of the Torah is so great. The schus of learning Torah as we go into Shabbos is something that's absolutely phenomenal and can make a huge difference in our lives and in everybody's lives. This week's parsha, we start Sefer Devarim. Ela Devarim Asher Dibe Moshe El Kol Yisrael. These are the words that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to all of Yisrael. The Torah's vocabulary choice is actually very striking. What are the words that Moshe, these words were a kind of a very, very sort of veiled rebuke of the whole nation. They were like an admonishment. Why does the Torah not begin its report of Moshe's farewell address with these are the rebuke or Moshe admonished Klai Yisrael? Why did it use a sort of a neutral kind of term such as words, right, to soften what was actually a rebuke? It's true that Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, as we know, wanted to kind of preserve the dignity of the nation. So he just kind of alluded to sort of past failings with great sensitivity and kind of restraint. But he delivered much more than sort of mere words. Thus the question remains, right? If this is teichacha, if this is rebuke, call it teichacha. Why sort of disguise its true identity? So perhaps the Torah is teaching us a very deep lesson concerning the nature of rebuke. Words in as of themselves are kind of neutral. They are a kind of a form of a communication requiring definition, which occurs when the other party receives, interprets, and internalizes the message. Only when the words find a kind of a receptive heart do they actually crystallize into something more. Could be guidance, could be correction, right? Whatever it might be, which might even affect, hopefully, transformation in the person. If the receiving party, right, kind of deflects or ignores or kind of resists the communication, so then the words remain what they were at the onset. Just actually words with no real import at all. Moshe understood that rebuke receives its kind of designation, its power, only after the listener accepts it as such. Thus, by expressing his tochacha as devarim, he was actually leaving room for Klai Yisrael to receive his message on their own sort of terms. They could hear kind of beneath the surface and choose to grow, or they could ignore it and leave it as sort of mere words, kind of hanging in the air, right? The speaker kind of submitted the content of the message, but it still actually required the listener to complete the kind of the circuit. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos Show. My name is Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos Show with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. And a warm welcome to those who are joining us now. We are this week Parshas Devarim. So I have a bit of a dilemma. You know, it's Shabbos Chazoin, it's a Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, and maybe we should have some words sort of addressed to that. And then, but at the same time, it's Parshas Devarim, and this is a Parsha show, as well as a Hilchos Shabbos show. So maybe we should talk about the Parsha. So my problem was solved. Please, God, we'll talk today about the parsha, and I've had the opportunity to now to prepare a shir for Tisha B'Av itself. So Bez Hashem, then we'll do justice as a, with the help of Hashem to issues around Tisha B'Av. So the parsha Devarim is the beginning of Moshe Rabbeinu's soliloquy, Moshe Rabbeinu's final address to the Jewish nation, spread over a period of 37 days from Rosh Chodesh Shvat until the day that he was Niftar on the seventh day of Adar. And he recalls various events that took place. He does tend to give the Jewish nation a lot of a, as you mentioned in the previous thing, a bit of Musar, a bit of a sort of a talking to, as he prepares them, as Rav Hirsch says, he's preparing them to go now to Eretz Yisrael. They had been living up till now in a miraculous environment, surrounded by clouds of glory, eating man, having water sort of piped in wherever they needed to go. And now they were going to a situation of living a little bit more naturally. It wasn't natural at all. It was all with Nisim, with all the miracles of Hashem, but it seemed a little bit more natural, and therefore they needed to be warned and reminded about certain things that had happened in the past, and they were given some special mitzvahs. Rav Hirsch says there were over 70 new mitzvahs that were never mentioned before that appear in Sefer Devarim to ready us for this occasion. But at the end, we talk about Moshe Rabbeinu recounts some of the events. And towards the end, we talk about the battle that Moshe Rabbeinu fought with the kings of Sichon, and Og, the kings of the Emori, which, as we discussed last week, became the land that was taken over and inherited by the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh. And just to talk a little bit about this character, Torah says, Kirak Og Melech HaBashan. This man, Og, the king of Bashan, was a giant. Nisham Yeser Ar Harfayin. He was left over from amongst all the other giants. And it tells us a little bit interesting biological information about him. Hinei Arsai, the cot they put him in when he was a baby, Eres Barzel. It had to be iron because nothing else would have been able to hold him. How long was it? Teisha amas arka. The cot was 9 amas long. If we say that amma is approximately 50 centimeters, so we're talking about a baby's cot that was 4.5 meters long. The arba amas rochba and 4 amas, let's say 2 meters. Why? In the normal amot that we measure by. This was the size of the baby. I have no idea what Mrs. Og, what Og's mother looked like, but it must have been quite a pregnancy. Now, we know the height of Og, king of Bashan, was absolutely awesome. As in fact, the Torah tells us and testifies, if when he was in a cot as a baby, his cot was already nine amos long, 4.5 meters long by 2 amos by 2 meters wide, and the Rashbam, the grandson of Rashi, explains that we're talking about the cot that he was in when he was a little baby. And they had to make it out of iron, because if they made it out of wood, it would have absolutely broken. And Rashi brings, what does it mean, ba'amas ish, in the ama of a man? In other words, that when they measured the amas of Og's cot, so it was not the normal, not as I just said, the normal ama of a normal person. No. We're talking about the ama. The ama means from the tip of the middle finger to the elbow is considered to be an ama. So we're talking about Og's ama and not the ama of a regular person. So that gives you an idea. We're talking a lot even bigger than 4.5 meters. In fact, in the Gemara in Nida, on Daf Choftal Amud Beis, they bring a brisa which sort of explains to us the true size of Og. Tanya, we learned in a brisa, Abishol Oimer, Abishol says, some say it was Rabbi Yochanan, right? Koy the Mason Hayisi says, I was a burial worker. And Pamachas, once time, Ratzti Achatzvi, I was chasing a deer, the Nichnasti Bakulis Shalmais, and I was running alongside the thigh bone of a dead body. Veratzti Acharov Shloish Parsois, and I ran after him for 3 parsois. A parsa is 4 mil, let's call a mil approximately 1 kilometer. So this is 12. I ran after him for 12 kilometers. I never managed to catch the deer, the Koilis Loikosa, but I never reached the end of that thigh bone. And I came back and I sort of went back and read the sort of tombstone. They told me that this was the grave of Og Melech HaBashan. So we're talking, okay, this may be an exaggeration, but we're talking about 12 kilometers high. In other words, the Abishol is telling us that when he was running after this goat, and he ran for a distance of 3 parsois, 12 kilometers, so he was running along the kulis, the main bone of a dead person, and at the end of that distance, right, he had to sort of could no longer catch the goat, so he gave up. He didn't manage to catch the goat, but he didn't manage to sort of get past the end of this kulis bone. But what really is surprising, in as big as Og was, he wasn't the biggest. There were actually people even bigger than him. Rabbeinu Bechaya brings in Parshas Shelach that there were 3 different names given to these giants: Nephilim, Anakim, and Rephaim. Nephilim were the sort of the heads of the family. They were the ones that the malachim that were thrown out of heaven mentioned in the Medrash and Parshas Braces. And they were like no other human beings, that you couldn't even look at them. And if you looked at them, so you became incredibly frightened. And then they sort of became weaker, and they became only called Anakim, because they would kind of, it looked like When they were walking, it looked like they were wearing the sun as a necklace. Well, I know it's with the depth perception, it looked like the sun was around their necks. Because again, you couldn't even look at them. Right? It was like looking at a very, very, very tall tower. And then as the generations passed, again, they sort of morphed on, and they got smaller and smaller. And those are the Nephilim. Their strength was even less. And they were just called Nephilim. And Rephaim and Oy Melech HaBashan was from the Rephaim. And he was sort of the lowliest of all of them. Because the Medrash Tanchuma says that who Nish'ar, he was the leftovers. He was the Shirayim from the other Rephaim. And that's referring to Og, who killed Amraphel and his friends, and he was sort of the dregs of the giants, like the peels left over from the olives. You just sort of that are left in the bottom of the olive press, right? And when we talk about Vayavai Apollet, the escape he came to Avraham Avinu, that's Og. And the reason why he was merited to be saved from the floods was in the merit of Avraham Avinu, and so that the Jews could inherit his land and settle there. We're going to come back after the break. This is 101.9, and this is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show. My name is Rabbi Moshe Shlomo. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay with us.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Shnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show with Rabbi Moshe Shnurb. We are talking about Og, Melech HaBashan. And we just saw that as great and as big as Og was, he was actually a shorty compared to some of his ancestors. He was sort of the shortest and the most insignificant of all the other giants, who were even sort of much, much taller and much grander than he was. Now, the reason behind the huge size of these Nephilim and Anakim and Rephaim, and of course included amongst them was Oy Melech HaBashan, was because these were actually children of malachim, of angels that came down to this world. As is brought in the Yalkut Shemoni in Bereshis, says straight away, these two malachim, whose names were Shamchozai and Azael, and they said before Hashem, Ribbono Shel, master of the universe, right? We're saying in front of you that when you created your world, we argued, Ma enosh ki tiskerenu. What's so great about people? Why are you even giving them any regards? And Hashem answered them, well, if I don't have people, what's going to be with the world? So they said to him, Ribbono Shel Olam, we'll go and fill the world. So Hashem said to him, God levi ado lafanai, it's revealed to me, if you go down and live in this world, so you have no chance against the Yetzer Hara, and you're going to be worse than any human being. So they said to him, try us. Give us permission, and we're going to go live with human beings, and you'll see that how we're going to make a Kiddush Hashem, how we're going to sanctify your name. So Hashem said to him, go, live with them. Straight away, they went down and began to make a mess of themselves. They get involved with the females, beautiful females, and of course they couldn't control their desire. And straight away, Shamchazai saw a young girl whose name was Istaya, and he liked her, and he said, come, marry me. And she said to him, no, I'm not going to marry you until you teach me the Shem Amafoyrish, the explicit name of Hashem, that you use to go up to heaven when you mention it. So he taught her this name, and she mentioned it, and she went up to heaven and did not allow herself to be ruined by him. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, since she separated herself from the Avera, so I'm going to put her up there amongst the seven stars, so that she'll be a merit for the world. And she was put in the constellation of Pleiades, so-called the seven sisters, which can be found in Taurus. And when Shamchazai and Azal saw this, they got up and they married women and they had children. In Pirkei d'Avolezer, it says, of course, that the flood came and wiped out everything that existed in the world, with the exception of Noach and whatever he had with him in the Teva, right? And it says, Vayishoer ach Noach, only Noach was left, and Oeg Melech HaBoshen also remained. He sat on a piece of wood under the sort of the floor of the Teva, and he swore to Noach and to his sons that he will be for them a slave forever. So what did Noach do? He made a little hole in the Teva, and he supplied Og with food every single day, and he was able to survive. As it says, Rak Og Melech HaBoshen Nisham Yes Arifan. He was the only one that actually survived. And it says that Og was saved and he escaped from the Mabul, and that's why he's actually called Hapolit, the escapee. He escaped from the Mabul. Why did he merit to be saved from the Mabul? So Rav Tzadik HaKohen Lublin writes in Tzidkas HaTzadik, in letter 96, he says, Mishu Shomer Abris, someone who was very, very careful about his morality, V'lo Yiro Keri Miyamov, and never ever had a nocturnal emission. So such a person is considered a yafetoy, is considered a good-looking person in the pasuk. As we see by Yosef, it says he was yafetoy. And that's why it says in Mishle, Sheker Achein Vehevel Hayofi, right? The Chein, I don't know how to translate that, is a lie, and beauty is nothingness, because we find amongst the nations of the world that there were people like Og who managed to escape from the door of the Mabul, and surely without the Teva, he wouldn't have had a chance to escape. And the reason he was saved was because he had this tremendous purity, and he never ever was involved in any kind of any immoral kind of act, which is kind of amazing to consider the kind of personality he was. But Birkei d'Avolezer further brings that after this huge miracle that was done to Avraham Avinu, where he was saved from the fiery furnace in Ur Kasdim, and he came out from the fire unscathed, and everyone saw him. So all the great leaders of the generation came to give him gifts, and Nimrod took his servant Og and gave him to Avram to be his servant forever. Right? And Og actually became one of the regular family members of Avram Avinu. He had a bris milah together with all of the rest of Avram's family. And his name was changed to Eliezer. And that's in fact what it says in Maseches Sofrim. But obviously the question is, okay, you want to tell me that Og Melech HaBoshen is Eliezer, but Eliezer was a big tzaddik. As the Gemara says in Yuma, that he was sitting, he spent his whole life sitting and learning Torah, teaching Avram's Torah. He was Moishel. He had complete understanding of Avram's Torah, and he was the Rebbe. He was the one who said the Shir and taught Torah to all the students. Furthermore, Chazal say in the Medrash that what does it mean? Umoshel b'chol ashelo. He ruled over everything. That he had total control over his own evil inclination. But we know Og was a Rasha, right? Similarly, at the very end of the first parak of Maseches Derech Eretz Zuta, it says there were 10 tzaddikim who entered Gan Eden while they were still alive, and amongst them is Eliezer Eved Avraham. And yet we find that Og Melech HaBoshan, the Gemara says, that Moshe Rabbeinu actually killed him. So what's going on here? So in the Das HaKenim, Rebbe Tosfos, it says, he holds that we need to say that there were actually two Og Melech HaBoshans. One was a Rasha that Moshe Rabbeinu killed, and one was Avram's Eved, and then became a king. Right? Eliezer sort of completed his life as the king of Bashan for many, many years, even before the Bnei Yisrael wanted to cross through his lands, right? And at that point, he ascended alive to Gan Eden. And then his throne was inherited by another king who was also called Og, right? The same name as the previous king, as that, you know, just like all the kings of Egypt are called Paro, so too all the kings of that area were called Og. And that was the one, the subsequent Og was the one that was killed by Moshe. That's one approach to how we understand why one was a Rasha and one was a Tzaddik. There were two, but there's another approach that's brought, and that is, we know that every person has within him good qualities and negative qualities, and of course they merge and they mix, and every action is comprised of both the good and the bad. You know, we are a composite of opposites that are similar to each other, but they're so different and they're all wrapped together. The good portion of a person is called the levush, the wrapping, the clothing. And that is what tries to get a person used to learning Torah, to doing mitzvot, and doing all kinds of good deeds. And the evil portion of a person is called beged, also a garment, miloshen begida. Begida is a rebel, right? As it says, bogdim bagdu, right? And the rebels have rebelled, right? Ubeged bogdim bagadu. So do we see it's the lashon of rebelling against Hashem, says Yeshaya. And he's also, that bad part is also called a shade, which tries to incite the person to do all kinds of sins, right? And the ability of a person to separate, right? To separate the good from the bad is something that is our job, and of course the tzaddikim, the great righteous people, are able to clearly delineate and subjugate the evil part of their personality to the good part of their personality. And in fact, in the Yalkut Ruveni, it says regarding Yosef, when Yosef was with Mrs. Potiphera, So it says, Vatispaseyu bibigdoi. She grabbed him by his garment, by his beged. And it says, he heard there that Yosef himself ran away and he left his beged. What's his beged? The shed, the negative part of his personality. He left there for Mrs. Potiphar. And she was a great witch. And she said to him, what? You're rebelling against me. You brought me a shade? What, you think I don't know the trick that you've done against me? I want you, not your negative part of your personality. In other words, we found the same thing by Sarah, Imenu, when she was taken to Paro. So she wasn't really with Paro, but she brought to Paro this shade in place of her through a shvua that so to the wife of Potiphar, right? She wanted Yosef to do an avera with her. Yosef separated his evil portion, which is called beged, right, which is the expression of rebellion, right, from the good portion of him, which is called levush. And that's what she says, Vatispaseyu bebigdoi. She just was able to grab on to his evil portion, and he left it. Vayazo bigdoi yodi, left in her hand, and he actually ran out. In other words, that through the using various names of Hashem, Yosef left in the hands of the wife of Potiphar just the beged, just the shade, which is the evil part of his personality. And he himself, his good side, ran out, and that's called the levush. But Eshes Potiphar was this big witch and understood that he had brought her a shade. She said, I want you. And that's also what happened with Mordechai and Esther, that they also knew to use certain names of Hashem, and they could separate the bad part of her personality from the good, and they made him swear that he would separate from Esther Malka, and that went, that beged went to Achashverosh, and she was not there at all, and actually looked like her physical a presence, and had the shape and form of Esther, though you couldn't have told the difference. And Mordechai Yehudi did this through the using the explicit name of Hashem, and that's why, in fact, Esther was never violated, and she remained pure to Mordechai, her husband. Right? The Ben Ishchai says in Ben Yoyada, for that reason, Achashverosh was able to sort of, in his time with Esther, he says he was able to experience whatever he wanted to experience. Sometimes he was able to envisage her that she was a young maiden, or sometimes she was seemed like an older woman. Whatever desire Achashverosh had, because her shade personality could change into anything that Achashverosh wanted. The Arizal brings down in Eitz Chaim that the second King Daryavish, who was the son of Esther Amalka and Achashverosh, so he was actually born from the shade part of Esther, and which actually was the part that was with the Achashverosh, and nevertheless, still, he's considered the son of Esther, because that shade was actually part of her. It's that negative part of her personality, and therefore King Daryavish is called by Achazal. He's just called Daryavish ben Esther. It was Daryavish, the son of Esther. And that's also the reason that Daryavish was half bad and half good. Because even though he was a goy, right, he was the one that gave the order to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash and actually gave the Jews permission to go even before the days of Koresh. He allowed them to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Similarly, the Chidah reveals to us in his Sefer Devash Lapi that this was also what happened with Yael, the wife of Chever Hakeni, right? Who was one that killed Sisera, right? And it says also, right? The Ari Zal brings the fact that Esther was actually a Gilgal of Yael. And the same way as Sisera fell into the hand of Yael, so too Haman fell into the hand of Esther. Right? As it says by in the Shira of Devorah, it says, Hakochavim bimsmim silatam, the stars from their orbits, nilchamu, they fought against Sisera. And those three words, Hakochavim hey, mim silatam, mem, nilchamu, is the acronym of Haman. And it's known that in the same that a shade that was looked like Yael was actually the one that was together with Sisera. So Esther did not become Tomei, and Achashverosh only defiled her shades. So let's get back to our question. How could El Og have been Eliezer? So we've said that Og was distinct in the fact that in spite of the fact that he lived in the generation of the flood, he never ever violated himself. Therefore, he was merited to be saved and became Eliezer. And Eliezer, because of his greatness, Avram taught him the secret of also being able to sort of separate himself. And the positive half of Eliezer became the king of Og, or the king of Emoiri, and went up to Gan Eden alive, while the negative part became the other Og who was killed by Moshe Rabbeinu. Just something a little bit interesting to take with us into the Shabbos. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the late afternoon Erev Shabbos show with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. And a warm welcome for those of you who are just joining us now. It's great to have you on board so close to Shabbos. I hope you're getting ready at least. And for those who were with us for the previous part, I hope we were inspired and learned something maybe we didn't know before about some of the famous characters in our holy Torah. But now we're going to go to our Hilchos Shabbos slot. But of course, as we do always at this point, just to give you the very important times you need to know for this coming Shabbos. So this afternoon, the earliest time to light your Shabbos candles is coming up just around the corner, 4:27. 4:27 is the earliest time to light your Shabbos candles. And you know what I'm going to say next? If you can, go for it. What an opportunity to be able to grab a little extra time from the Shabbos to sort of shut off the hustle and bustle, get out of it, of the week, and enter into the beautiful, pristine, and beautiful and peaceful realm of a Shabbos Kodesh. You won't know what I'm talking about until you've actually tried it once. But 1 week, maybe this week, or next week, make the effort. Get it all together. Be a little bit more organized, a little bit more sort of less spontaneous, and make sure that everything, yeah, maybe start making Shabbos a day or two earlier so that Friday afternoon, it's just putting the last things together, just putting stuff on the hot tray, getting a shower, getting ready for Shabbos, putting away all the mukzah, so that at 4:27 you can actually, with total serenity, walk up to your prepared candles and light them and settle into the absolute beauty of a Shabbos Kodesh. Spend some time with the kids, read a book, do something that will get you into the right frame of mind for a wonderful Shabbos. So 4:27 is the earliest. If you can't make that, so then obviously 4:45 is great. 5 o'clock, anything is good. The latest time for benching licht this afternoon is at 5:16. 5:16, that is the absolute deadline. As far as we're concerned, that is when Shabbos must start. All the muktzah must be away. All the food must be on our tray. We must be out of the shower and be ready for Shabbos when we light the candles at 5:16. Yes, there are obviously 18 minutes later for dangerous emergency situations, but that's not for us. That's a one sort of in a lifetime situation that a person might be in, that one has those extra minutes. But generally speaking, we consider that time on the Luach Lekotan that's labeled as candlelighting as being our absolute deadline. Shkia then is, as we say, 5:34, 18 minutes later. Therefore, if you want to make sure that you are, when you daven Ma'ariv, it's proper night, that you can fulfill the Torah mitzvah of saying Kriyat Shema in the right time. So all you have to do is wait until 5:52. 5:52 is proper night. And then, of course, we have a wonderful, wonderful evening. Shabbos, obviously. Yes, it is Shabbat Chazon, right? But and although we haven't had meat for a couple of days, Shabbos, of course, we're allowed to have meat and wine and celebrate Shabbos absolutely properly, absolutely appropriately, as we would and do every other week. And again, it's still an early Shabbos. So when you finish the meal and the guests have gone or the kids have gone off, do something quality. Open a sefer, go through the parsha, read a book that's a book with some good content, and make Shabbos really, really something special. Tomorrow, of course, we lay in Parshat Varim, the first sedra of the final book of the Torah. As I always say, I remember someone saying that when we lay in Parshat Varim, it's time to start thinking about final exams for those who are in school or university, and hearing that was his comment on it. But of course, it's also definitely time to start thinking about Rosh Hashanah, which of course is now that we've already passed Rosh Chodesh Av, it's less than 2 months away till the Yom Adin, till Rosh Hashanah. So we're going to lay in Parshas Devarim, and of course, the special Haftarah, which gives this Shabbos its name, the first chapter of the book of Yeshayahu, Chazon Yeshayahu, a very, very sort of telling prophecy about the status of the Jewish nation and why we're still in Galut after all these years. Right? It's done, of course, in the tune of Eicha, except for certain select psukim. And Shabbos carries on after that. Yes, we will say Avarachimim, and of course, it is a slightly more somber a Shabbos, because we are still in the 9 days and contemplating what the 9 days is all about. The Perek of Pirkei Avot on tomorrow afternoon will be the Perek Beis, the second chapter. Go through it, learn something. Be inspired by what our great sages say. And of course, Shabbos Kodesh finally will end tomorrow night at 6:08. 6:08 is the end of Shabbos. And we go back into the 9 days. And of course, looking forward to Yom Kippur, to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, of course, will be on Wednesday night, Thursday. A full 25-hour fast with the halachas that we know we need to perhaps revise them again. I think the fast will start at about 25 to a 6 and end somewhere in the realm on next Thursday night of about 6 o'clock, I think 6:01 or something along those, maybe later, maybe it's 6, 608, but you can consult the Luach and find that out. We're talking about animals on Shabbos, what animals are allowed to go out with, what they're not allowed to go out with. One is not allowed to lead an animal with a bell around its neck, as doing so kind of generates sound, and it is also midrabanan, rabbinically prohibited to generate sounds with an object specifically designed for that purpose, such as a musical instrument, etc. However, if the bell is sort of silenced and makes no noise, then the animal may be led around in a private area, but not a public domain. If the animal were to be led around in a public domain, it would seem like it was being taken to sort of market for sale, says the Gemara in Shabbos. The bell itself is not considered a burden, as it is kind of secondary to the animal's halter. Now, one may take out a horse wearing a bridle or a donkey wearing a halter, since these items are used to sort of direct the animal and to prevent them from running away. However, a donkey may not be taken out wearing a bridle, as this would be kind of what the word says, an excessive type of precaution, right? Far more than is necessary to actually ensure that the donkey is not going to run away. The general sort of rule is anything normally used to ensure that an animal will not run away is not considered a burden, but anything sort of excessive is considered over the top, is considered a burden, and is not allowed to be go out with on Shabbos. A dog may be allowed out into the public domain wearing its collar, because that is the normal way for it to go out, since it allows one to sort of restrain the dog if necessary by grabbing the collar or by attaching a leash to it. The person holding the leash is not considered carrying the leash, since it's secondary to the dog's body. However, he must take care to hold the leash within a tefach, 10 centimeters of the end of the leash. He also must make sure that the leash does not droop to within a tefach, 10 centimeters of the ground at any point. If either of these things happens, it looks like, he's carrying the leash. If the leash is too long, he may sort of wrap it around the dog's neck so that it's less likely to droop. Okay, we're going to take a break now and come back with some final comments afterwards. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is the late afternoon air of Shabbos. My name is Rabbi Moshe Sturm. We'll be back in a moment. And this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Sturm, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is the air of Shabbos, late afternoon show. Rabbi Moshe Sturm here. We are sort of closing out the show as we get very, very close to Shabbos. Shabbos is coming around the corner very, very soon, and we're all getting excited in anticipation for the holy, holy Shabbos. Baruch Hashem, what a zchus we have every week to greet the Shabbos Malkasa, to be enveloped into embrace, and to sort of change ourselves from what we are during the week and become someone totally different on Shabbos. The books say that one's whole countenance changes on Shabbos, because we're in the rhapsody, we're in the sort of connection with Hashem, and it's such a special occasion. We're talking about what you can and can't carry out into the streets on Shabbos. Obviously, we're talking about in a situation where we don't have a proper Eruv, not like, thank God, in Johannesburg. We have a blind person may go into a public domain with his seeing eye dog, even though he is holding the sort of the harness attached to the dog. Since the harness is always attached to the dog, so it's considered sort of secondary to its body, and there's no problem of carrying at all. Right? And there are some Aruch HaShabbos wants to be a little bit stricter. It seems sort of reasonable to permit, it just makes a sense to allow that for the blind person. Ravadia certainly allows it. A dog may be taken out into a public place wearing sort of dog tags that are connected to its collar or ear, and on which is kind of engraved the names of the dog's owner. And those tags just simply make it clear that the dog has an owner, and thus people are more likely to sort of leave it alone, not to try to claim it, not to play with it, and that is permissible on Shabbos. Well, that's about all the time we have on this Erev Shabbos afternoon as we prepare for Shabbos Chazon leading up to Tisha B'Av this coming week. As we said, please God, we're going to come together again on Tisha B'Av and talk a little bit about the specter of that day, the mourning we experience, and hopefully the hope that we hold, the expectations, the excitement we have to please God, that the situation, if we do what we need to do, will change and improve, and we'll be able to herald the actual coming of Mashiach. But at this point, just to thank every single one of you for being part of our radio show, and to wish you all a beautiful, warm, geschmack, enlightening, and inspiring a good Shabbos to one and all. Shabbat shalom vorach, and thank you for being with us.